When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on everything at Menards. Keep your guns, ammunition, and valuables secure with Sports Appeal Gun Safes. We have multiple sizes available to fit your needs. The spacious interiors are fully carpeted to protect against scratches and include adjustable side shelves to suit your storage needs. Save big on Sports Appeal at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 6, Episode 51. This is the magical 200th episode. Woo! The bicentennial! Let the banners fly, the flags wave, and all that other stuff. We don't get to celebrate bicentennials too often here in Canada, so... At least in our lifetimes, anyway. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We're also joined by Jaime Lippis Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
So I have a question. So last week you said you go to a hotel because Pollo doesn't like the fireworks. I mean, no dogs like the fireworks per se, but so where in the United States can you go to a motel or hotel where there is no fireworks?
It's not about complete elimination as it is leaving the utter war zone that is my neighborhood. People just go hog wild for like, oh, there's one way off in the distance, you know?
Yeah. So
we,
oh, I see. Right.
We did a
yeah.
good job. We found a new hotel that's a little bit closer. And I guess it's situated in a good spot because it's kind of in a commercial district where if people wanted to do fireworks closer to us, they probably would be, you know, trespassing for sure, and with cameras pointed at their faces.
Okay.
It discourages them, so it leaves you towards the residential, but the residential is further away because it's not in the commercial zone, so there we go.
Yeah, well, we had crazy people. We even had people, because we have Canada Day on Monday, so we had people blowing off fireworks on Sunday and then on Monday, and I'm pretty sure they were out there on Tuesday too. And might have been some on the 4th as well. Who knows?
Well, and whoever decided to put the two major soccer tournaments, the European Championship and Copa America, on when you could legally purchase fireworks was probably not doing their best amount of thinking. Because I visited a friend the other day who lives in Little Portugal in Toronto, and he said when Portugal won last weekend, it was like living in Lebanon, like just bombs bursting in air all over the place, because of course everybody had fireworks just sitting around for the Canada Day celebration. So, yeah.
Well, if you're looking for someone to blame, I'm pretty sure it was the Conservative Party of the United Kingdom that was responsible for that.
Well, that'll teach them.
That and Brexit, right? Alrighty, let's jump into the fact check. So I got a couple of things here. What we were talking last week about the sort of serial nature of some of these Doctor Who episodes where the stories continue over multiple episodes, and I was reminded that early Doctor Who episodes would run like 3, 4, 5 episodes long to do a story. They wouldn't resolve the problem within with one episode like the sort of Star Trek or the original series sort of did. But and it was very, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but when I was a kid, Batman was on like Tuesday and Wednesday, and they would start a series with a villain, and then they would finish it the next day on, you know, in the same bat time, same bat channel, which was kind of a neat little thing. And another bit of follow-up, I was kind of thinking, you know, we were talking about the two twins in the House of the Dragons having that epic battle, and, you know, often sometimes you see that they do employ twins, but in this case here, Luke Tittensor and his identical twin brother, Elliot I misspelled the spelling on the notes here. So one of those two is correct. One plays Eric Cargill and the other one plays Eric Cargill. Notice a difference? No?
Okay. Well, Eric and Eric, some people emphasize the A and say Eric.
Okay, Eric and Eric. Yeah, yeah. Well, I kind of did myself, but anyway. And Eric, the second one, Elliot, is the one who fell on the sword. So he was the one responsible for protecting Rhaenyra. But it was interesting to see that these two actors are and they, you know, if you see them side by side facing each other, they're pretty hard to tell apart, right? Mm-hmm. Only their mother would know. And this, I don't know if I should say this for later in the episode, but it was Tywin Lannister who said, any man who must say, I am the king, is no true king.
I wonder if that will come back up.
Yeah, it might. Yeah. And then I was talking about, I said, I wasn't a big movie fan back in the day, but what I meant to say was I wasn't a big war movie fan back in the day. I didn't watch a lot of movies. We were talking about Donald Sutherland last week. And like, for example, I can only remember seeing one John Wayne movie in my entire lifestyle. I think it was the Rooster Cogburn movie, or maybe there was one with, was that the one with, what's her name? From Philadelphia Story, Katharine Hepburn. Isn't she in a movie with him? But he's like Tom Cruise to me, like in terms of like, I never got into his acting style. And it was, to me, it always just seemed like the same sort of thing. So I never bothered watching his stuff. And there you go. So let's head over to the headlines. And Jonathan's got some sort of interesting news for us.
Sort of interesting in a very frustrating way. So last week we were talking about how, and in recent episodes we were talking about how exciting it was that Star Trek Prodigy was coming for season two, and it was going to drop on Netflix, and for some people it did. So imagine our surprise when we went to sit down and watch the 20 episodes that dropped on Netflix this week and found out that Canada is not on the list of countries that will be getting that through Netflix. So the countries that are excluded from seeing Star Trek Prodigy on Netflix include Canada, the Nordics, it says, CEE, Netherlands, Spain, Portugal, Poland, Russia, Belarus, and mainland China. Everywhere else can see it on Netflix. So our good friend Jaime Lopez Jr. has had access to it now for several days, and we are SOL. So that is extremely frustrating. Now, I took a look around the interwebs to see if I could figure out, what is going on. There seemed to be some speculation on Reddit that this was because of the deal that was signed with Bell Media, because they did previously have the rights to certain pieces of content, whether or not that was still tied up with that, but it was simply speculation. I don't think anybody had really the inside scoop or anything. But either way, I think the only way you're watching it in Canada is if you happen to have a VPN and you can dial into another country's Netflix. Otherwise, you are going to wait around for who knows how long.
Yep. Well, I was going to say, because Keen messaged me earlier in the week and said that he had been watching it, but he said he had to get on a boat and go into the middle of the lake and do something weird. So what did he say? Because he was interested that his kid, his son, who's very, very young, he was replying, because I mentioned somebody said timey-wimey. It was timey-wimey was said by Darrell in the trailer. And he says his two-year-old son was watching the episode last night, episode one, I guess, maybe the first one. And he has a few words now. One of the words he was able to say is Enterprise.
Ah, that's awesome.
So he's the number two fan, I guess. All right. And I just looked on Just Watch. It says CTV, but it only talks about first season. So I suspect it might be a CTV's kind of like wanting to show it or something. Right.
Yeah, it's possible that they're going to move it and put it on CTV Sci-Fi or on Crave or who knows what. But obviously, they're not beholden to the timetable that Netflix is. So, Jaime, I guess you're our conduit. You're going to have to tell us whether or not it's good.
Yeah, do a play-by-play. So we'll,
will watch it and we can like listen in and you can just tell us what's happening.
Yeah.
Just live vicariously.
This guy with this thing came in with a stick and he beat them over the head with the stick. And
It's really weird there that you all can't see it at all. Like, it doesn't make any sense that it wouldn't be on one of your sci-fi channels, or since this is a Nickelodeon you know, a Nickelodeon co-production, you would think, oh, okay, it'd be one of your kids' channels then. But I think it's really an indictment of how Paramount Plus, the one true home for all things Star Trek, has whittled away its whole, you know, premise around that. For folks who are unclear, Star Trek Prodigy Season 2 dropped the entire season on Netflix, just like Netflix tends to do, and it's a whopping 20 episodes. They are breezy. They're like 22 minutes each. I've only gotten into about to start episode 6. So in one of those, like, oh man, you know, it was a, you know, once per week for like 10 weeks. Then they took a weird break, and then once a week for 10 weeks. No, it's like, oh, Netflix binge. I sure hope I don't find out that, like, Rock Talk was Janeway the entire time and timey-wimey shit. You know? I have to avoid spoilers on the internet now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of interesting news and Paramount Plus, Apple TV has outgrown, in the U.S., has outgrown and overtaken Paramount Plus in terms of the streaming services. We talked about this previously on the show. It looks like Amazon Prime is in first place with 22%, Netflix in second, Max, or HBO Max, I guess, is that right? HBO Max? They're in third.
Yeah, that was the old name. And it's one that I continue to use, like X, formerly known as Twitter, to help people bridge the gap.
And then the Disney Plus, 11%, Hulu. So it's pretty close. I mean, Disney, Hulu, Apple TV, and Paramount Plus are all within a couple of points, percentages of each other. So, but Paramount Plus is now in the seventh position, the position of shame.
Yeah, and there was more rumblings, just a quick follow-up, Tim. There was more rumblings this week that they're still working on a sale deal, and there was talk that they're going to merge with Max. So Max and Paramount would basically become one app, and then that would give them whatever that percentage is. I think it's pretty close to 20% of the market if they could merge them, right? So yeah, there's still discussions there. I didn't make a headline out of it for us this week because I read through the Wall Street Journal and some other business news this week and was like, this is too complicated. We'll wait till they make a deal.
Well, based on the numbers here, 14% plus 9%, that would put them in first position. If they would be 23%. But that, you know, then it also depends on if people follow along with the merger, right?
Well, and who knows what that means as far as cost and as far as, you know, implications. I mean, obviously, we talked about this pretty extensively in our discussions about, you know, the streaming wars as they've happened. It makes perfect sense for some of these to amalgamate, you know, whether that's Apple purchasing, you know, some of these things with its liquid assets, or whether that's, you know, some mergers like this one we're talking about with Warner Brothers and Paramount. There can't be like 14 streaming services that require your attention at all times. It doesn't make any kind of sense for consumers. So,
right. Cool. Oh, and this next story here, we're talking about Mrs. Flood last week with the mysterious end of Doctor Who season one, because there's only been number one season. I'm not going to let that go. But no. Mrs. Flood apparently is, the theory is that she's a classic Doctor Who character, even more obscure than Sutek. Called the White Guardian. And based on the fact that she was all dressed in white at the end there on the rooftop in the last, you know, to be continued episode. Was it to be continued? I can't remember. Yeah, so this is what people are thinking, that she is the White Guardian. Mm-hmm. And as a bit of follow-up on that, I also posted a video here on the YouTube where Tom Baker's Doctor who is the fourth Doctor, is talking to the White Guardian, who's played by a man in this case, but good little 10-minute clip talking about the first time we met the White Guardian in the Rebos operation, and you watch that and enjoy.
I've got a great one for us. So we talk about, you know, iconic things in science fiction fantasy all the time. Mm-hmm. Is there anything more iconic to sci-fi nerds than...
And Friends fans,
then Princess Leia's gold medal bikini from Return of the Jedi?
Probably not.
Yeah, it's really difficult to think of anything, because even for, you know, the some amount of folks who have a modern backlash, is like, well, it's kind of notorious at that point then. It kind of just helps the fame, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, this particular item can be yours. Oh, that's right. the actual ensemble that Carrie Fisher wore in Return of the Jedi is going up for auction. So it is the gold bikini top, the armband, the wristband, the sort of waist piece with the flowing gown around it, mm-hmm. all available for the starting bid of 30,000 US at Heritage Auctions. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because obviously you never know where the starting bids of these things are going to be and what it's going to go for. This auction is on now and it is apparently closing on July 25th. I just couldn't help but think, like, there's no way that's going to go for $30,000. It's going to go for like $300,000.
Oh, yeah, easily. Well, especially since there's no underwear in space, according to George Lucas, right?
I'm so curious to see how much this finally sells for. Yeah, there's got to be some obscenely rich private collector who's like, yeah, I'm going to get, you know, Princess Leia's gold medal bikini that I've been fantasizing about since I was 11 years old, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Should be Harrison Ford, but, for all you know.
Sure, could be. But yeah, that's a pretty cool thing. Often, you know, we see every once in a while, we'll see something cool go up for auction, really obscure. But this is, this is pretty crazy. This is the actual iconic costume of all iconic costumes.
Interesting. Or after with the ruby slippers, I guess we can put it with that one, right?
Yeah. I look forward to a discussion next week on our Slack channel as to what is the most iconic of the
costumes or hardware, like things that people would want to collect.
I mean, you know, again, I think we'll stick with costumes. If you start going beyond that, then somebody might say they want the Enterprise original model or, you know, something like that.
Or the Batmobile Luke Skywalker's lightsaber.
Yeah.
/ Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber.
Yeah. Right. I want Shatner's toupee. I think that's really where the money Shatner's is.
How about his girdle?
That's the one.
Yeah. It's iconic.
It certainly is.
Or any one of his ripped shirt sweaters, ripped jerseys from the show.
That's right.
All right, we're at the main part of the show where we're talking about something.
No. We missed
one more. I threw in one last edition.
What if there was one more story?
Wait, you may not have queued up your tabs. That is The Verge reporting on Entertainment Weekly's reports that Marvel's What If series is supposedly going to end with the third season as a capstone to the trilogy. So, well, there, it's no season 3 yet for a premiere date. I'm okay with things coming to a definitive end. They can always do, you know, what now? ? You know, you could make up some new things if you'd like.
Well, they did a satirical series in the 90s called What The? That was basically, you know, they let, you know, people have fun with the sort of tropes and genre of science fiction and comic books and stuff like that and kind of go hog wild with the characters. So maybe they'll do What The?
There we go. What The?
All right. Now are we at the main part of the show where we talk about something normally Star Trek, but this time Star Wars? All right. We're talking about Star Wars The Acolyte, Season 1, Episode 6, and this one is called Teach/Corrupt. Interesting. So,
all right, Jaime, what's your pitch?
I went with, funny you say that, because I went with pitch meeting, : join me and together we can rule the galaxy. That's kind of the theme.
Yeah. Yeah, I went similarly. I went, you got your dark side on my light side. No, you got your light side on my dark side.
What a dark side mess. Yeah. I was thinking like something like Freaky Friday, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That was the, it was a little, it's a little bit of a hacky thing to do to be like, well, we're twins, let's trade places.
Yeah.
But it worked. It actually worked pretty decently because we kind of wanted to know more about what Saul was keeping secret and May is sort of pushing that. And we kind of wanted to know what the hell was going on with the stranger. And so we got that too. And yeah, it considering this was a pretty breezy 30-minute episode, you know, it definitely kept the momentum going fairly well, considering the subterfuge obviously didn't last. In the case of Osha, it didn't last at all. Clearly, the stranger knew exactly who she was, and that was not a thing.
Well, he knew right from the tattoo on her arm, right?
Yeah, of course. And you know, May being undercover on Sol's ship, you know.
Didn't fool Basil.
Didn't fool Basil. Good on Basil. And somehow it fooled Sol for a little longer, but I think he was just distracted and then he figured it out pretty quickly.
Once the engine broke down and she didn't jump up to go and fix it, that might have been the first clue, right?
Yeah. And I've seen a few people speculate on exactly what the moment was. Why, you know, like what was the tip off that he finally figured it out, you know? I thought it was probably when he notices the pip droid. And the pip droid looks like it's been reset, right? Because he says, you know, oh, you really love your pip droid. I see you have great relationship with it. And then he notices that it's gone from having a blue readout to having a red readout, which means it's factory reset, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
But yeah, it definitely seemed like there was a few people sort of, you know, well, what was her tip? What was her giveaway? But I think more than anything, it was just that when Sol stopped sort of being in the state of shock at watching all of his comrades get sliced to bits, I think he finally just sort of
didn't notice the singed hair, like the smell of burning hair.
Well, that's the one that seems just a little the most, you know, but probably the most glaring thing is, wouldn't you have noticed that, like, she's got barbecued ends?
Yeah. No, nothing.
All right.
Yeah. Well, she was in later, right? Who knows, right?
Yep. Cool. This was not a pew, pew, pew heavy episode. So not a lot of what you'd call action, although it depends on your perspective. The thirst trap that the stranger is laying down for Osha could qualify as action of a different type, as he strips himself naked and goes for a swim and is talking about, you know, being seduced and everything else. There was a lot of thick layers of innuendo in that part.
Yeah, there was kiss him already kind of tension going on there.
Well, and it's funny because he talks about, you know, he goes through the old Sith checklist, right, where he says, you know, there are ways to access the Force that aren't the Jedi ways, you know, through hatred and anger and fear and desire. Which I think is really interesting that he added that one in there while he's like walking around. I mean, Mane Jacinto's a very attractive man, and to see him walking around, you know, shirtless and you know, it, clearly in the show he's stripped himself naked, and you know, it was pretty funny to tack that one on.
Yeah, without traditional pew pew pew, I went with Basil in his sort of WWF fight as best as he could as a tiny creature.
Yeah,
I had that one too, where he sort of runs at her shins and starts kicking her in the foot.
Yeah, that was pretty much the pew 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 as well.
Yeah, Easter eggs wise, there wasn't a ton, but I did catch a couple things. So from the comic books, I pulled the reference. So I've read, just for perspective, the comic books that are based on the High Republic happen earlier than this show by a fair amount, in that, as silly as it sounds, Venestra has hair in the comic books. So I'll give you a little perspective on how that worked out. So she's much younger in the comic books. So this happens, you know, a number of years later. But when her Padawan says to her, I know you don't like traveling in hyperspace, that's a reference to the fact that in the comic books, when she travels in hyperspace, she actually has visions. She has Force visions. It triggers her Force visions. So I was wondering when he said that, if that meant she was going to have a vision of, you know, the events or something had been going on. We didn't see that, but maybe we still will. But I just thought it was interesting that they brought it up. I don't know if that was brought up to be an Easter egg or if that was brought up to foreshadow that she has this ability. I also saw we saw Force Echoes for the first time. You know, we've heard voices before in some of the Star Wars stuff where, you know, you can hear, you know, somebody crying out in pain, but you don't actually see a vision. And this one, when they go down to the planet and they find all the dead Jedi, you actually see some of the sort of fight unfolding, and it's them sort of seeing Force visions. Force visions is something we saw in the Star Wars, the latest set of video games, the Jedi Survivor and the two games they did in that series so far, where you, as Cal Kestis, can actually like see some of the stuff that happened, you know, in the past using the Force. So that was kind of an interesting one that they've sort of brought that ability into the live action stuff now too. The other one was they didn't have Kylo music in any of the scenes with the stranger this time, like they did in the previous episode, but I just happened to leave the credits playing for this episode, and in the credits we heard more of Kylo's theme again this week. So again, more sort of deliberate placement of the Kylo Ren theme in The Acolyte, which we talked about last week, could be hinting towards exactly who and what the Stranger is.
Yeah, I didn't really have a ton here myself either, except possibly purple lightsaber that's also purple light whip.
It's a light whip, yeah. So she has that in the comic books too, the light whip. And, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit when we get to the big question, exactly what you can do with that light whip, because we saw it in action here, but there might have been another use for it at some point.
Hmm. Is it like anything related to Wonder Woman's, you know, light golden lasso? Or?
Well, we'll see. Quotes. So the Stranger got these killer quotes. I mean, just, you know, dripping with, you know, both innuendo as far as the sort of thirsty action going on in this one, but also just all these sort of hints around who he is and where he's from. So a special relationship, isn't it? Master and pupil, hinting again at his sort of knowledge of that dynamic. Why do you love people who can only go so far, who can't go as deep as you can? So again, just pushing Osha on her emotions. And I lost everything, Osha, but when you lose everything, that's when you're finally free. Again, just very ominous allusions to his past. Definitely a very strong, you know, he says pretty much overtly in this one, you know, yeah, I used to be affiliated with the Jedi. He doesn't necessarily say he was a Jedi. He says, you know, I used to be connected with them. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Did you guys pull any other quotes out?
I did not. And in fact, I'm glad you got the actual quote, because I was a bit lazy, and I will second your quote. But in my description, it is the Tyler Durden quote about finally being free when you've lost everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly a fully original thought, but it definitely speaks to his approach to this whole this whole sort of mystery that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So the big question for this one that I had was if the Stranger was a Padawan or was a Jedi. We see him have that very large scar on his back, and he sort of says, you know, she says, where did you get that? And he says, where do you think? And the inference is that, you know, he got it from the Jedi. Does it look like a whip mark?
It does look like a lash or two, because it looked like two of them, right? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But,
Is it possible that, you know, now that we're bringing Venestra into play, she's no longer on Coruscant, she's in the game now, she's, you know, found the bodies, and she's clearly going to be part of the conclusion of this story. I wonder if there's going to be a connection that maybe Venestra was the Stranger's master. And this was also a really good episode, sort of foreshadowing the prequel series of, you know, at one point she's talking with somebody on the communicator, and she's talking about, you know, the Senate investigating the Jedi and the bureaucracy and everything else. And it does kind of set up that there's sort of this level of, you know, dysfunction and, you know, disconnection and subterfuge going on, which, you know, that's obviously something comes really strongly back around when we see the prequel trilogy, right?
And I was also thinking about the paperwork, obviously, that has to get done, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's almost the paperwork, right?
Yeah. What do you have any other thoughts on sort of who the Stranger is or could be?
I hadn't really thought about that, but I don't know that we're any closer to Saul's reveal in terms of what went wrong and again, who started the fire kind of thing. Do we don't know that either? Right?
I think it was Billy Joel.
No, he didn't start the fire.
Oh, he didn't start the fire. That's right. Bob Marley? No, he shot the sheriff. Mm-hmm. Hang on.
But he didn't shoot the deputy.
He didn't shoot the deputy.
Actually, that was Jimmy Cliff. It wasn't Bob Marley.
There you go. There you go.
So Clapton's version is a cover?
Jimmy Cliff sang it first. Bob Marley covered Jimmy Cliff, and then Eric Clapton covered Bob Marley, yeah.
There we go. Today I learned.
This has been your Musical Minute with your host from Spotcast. Yeah, I think this is it's a really interesting mystery. We're not quite to Hold My Beer territory. We got two episodes to go. I think they've teed this one up to be, you know, Saul has left. It seems like he's probably headed to Brendok, where he's going to confront his past, and maybe we'll get a little more of the truth of his side of the story to May. But I don't think they could spend, I don't think they could do what they did before and do a whole episode just set in the past, because I think it would be really hard to do that and then have a conclusionary episode where we kind of get more conflict, actual, you know, the Stranger and Saul and Osha and May and Venestra and getting all the pieces in play. I just don't think they could do an entire flashback episode next one, but maybe. I mean, they have been giving us a lot of really tight episodes the last few. 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes. They could be saving up that runtime for the last two episodes to really kind of let loose. Maybe we're getting a killer, you know, hour plus finale.
And we have some fact check, live fact check, just in. Apparently, Bob Marley did write I Shot the Sheriff.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, but it was also made popular by Jimmy Cliff. I think it was made into a movie by Jimmy Cliff. Like, he plays a character who's, you know, not having a good time with the sheriff.
Any last thoughts on Acolyte before we move on?
Well, how many shows do we have left? Three?
Two.
Two.
Yeah, I believe it's eight total, and this was number six.
Yep.
I don't know how we're going to resolve this that quickly.
Yeah, like I said, we're not quite to the fully committed Jaime Lopez patented Hold My Beer episode, but
over the Lucas checklist 20 minutes into the last...
20 minutes to go. We better last get the checklist out.
Yeah, Back of the Sith, whatever it was called.
Well, and it's funny because they don't really have a concrete confirmation that they're going to do another season of this either. I think Leslie Headland, the showrunner, had said, you know, yeah, there's a way we could do a second season, but I don't think that was the goal. I think they were just trying to sort of tell a self-contained story.
Is she doing the movie with Ray, by the way?
I don't know. I have to look that up.
Okay. I just heard Daisy Ridley on Smartless.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Well, let's move on to our next thing, and I'll do a quick look to see if that's
the home of the dragon.
Yes, the home of the dragon.
The home of the dragon, the Burning Mill. So what happened in this episode?
Started with the Battle of the Burning Mill.
It was sort of my thing. My elevator pitch is about moving the pieces of the chessboard around.
Yeah.
Like, glue stuff happened. I'm not saying important stuff didn't happen, but it was kind of hard to find a quick summary of what happened. Because it was a lot of getting things into position for presumably the subsequent episode.
Is this the one where Matt Damon's character claims the disheveled castle, or was that the week before?
I think that was Matt Smith and Damon. This is the one where he claims the ruined castle of Harrenhal. But at the same time, we also see Kristen Cole, the Lord Commander / Hand. On his way to do the same thing. So I agree with you, Jaime. I feel like this was an episode about really, this was the last sort of moment before the conflict really breaks out. Obviously, we saw that sort of, the episode starts with this battle that we don't get to see, and it's probably fine because it was a big battle, but it didn't include any of our heroes. So they didn't really need to show us. Like, I'm honestly fine with them not showing us a huge battle that doesn't involve main characters because... I don't care. I'm sure it was cool. It would have been cool to see a huge battle between the Brackens and the Blackwoods, but eh. But the idea is that basically that's the first big fight of this civil war, is that these two sides that already hated each other but had declared for Aemon and Rhaenyra actually started, you know, stabbing one another. And so it's kind of on now. And then this very much felt like everyone's sort of getting into position. We've got, you know, Kristen headed to Harrenhal. We've got Daemon at Harrenhal. And then it sort of all builds towards this last portion, which is when Rhaenyra makes the call to make one last ditch effort to try and stop this before it gets really ugly. And we get this amazing scene at the end of the episode between Alicent and Rhaenyra inside the Sept, where they were there as girls, you know, harkening back to the first season. And, you know, we also get the clarity now that Alicent now knows that she misunderstood Viserys's last words, and yet she doubles down and basically says it's too late. You know, the men are going to war, and there's nothing that you know, we as two women can do about it, which is awful and sad. But it just feels like the stage is set. Next week's got to be a big battle episode, right?
Yeah. There's no mulligan, I guess, for her. Mm-hmm. But that was an interesting sort of, you know, subterfuge getting into the, I thought it was interesting dressing as Hannah Waddington, you know,
Waddingham. Yeah. She posted on social. Yeah.
Did she?
She posted on social media. She said, that's my outfit.
Yeah. And it was an interesting way to get into, cause that's the only place that she would be alone would be in that sept, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, again, it's another sort of talky episode, a good one. Like, you know, there was lots of good, these sort of smaller scenes. I thought the scene where we see Rhaenyra send her younger children away to protect them along with Baela and some dragon eggs, which I saw on social media this week. They confirmed that three of those eggs are Daenerys's eggs from Game of Thrones. So there was always a little speculation as to, you know, how did those eggs sort of leave Dragonstone, where most of the dragon eggs are? How come they ended up getting passed around at some point? And now we know that they all sort of made their way to the Eyrie, to the Vale, where they were there for safekeeping, theoretically. I do think it's hilarious that Lady Jane Aaron from the Vale apparently said, you know, you have our soldiers, we'll support you, but I want a dragon to protect the Eyrie. And they sent a baby dragon along with a bunch of kids. Oh, we sent you a dragon. It's just like a year old.
Yeah. In a cute little tiny cage, right?
By the way, it eats a lot of sheep.
Yeah. So they're saying that these three eggs are the ones that Daenerys has in Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I think they showed four eggs on screen. It's not clear if there are more, but three of those eggs, they match the colors. And so people were asking, and the response came from their social media feed from HBO this week, saying, yes, those three out of those four eggs were Daenerys's eggs that become Drogon.
Well, they just last forever. They're like chestnuts. They just last until they get planted.
Well, if you remember back to the very first season of Game of Thrones, there's also some blood magic that kind of brings them, because they're basically decorative. People don't think that they're really functional eggs. They just think that they're like, yeah, basically fossils. And it's not until they do the blood magic where they burn the witch, and they burn Khal Drogo's body, and they burn, and then Daenerys goes into the fire with the eggs, that she comes back out as the unburnt, and she comes out with the dragons. So theoretically, there's also some blood magic mixed in there that could have been the catalyst. But yeah, theoretically, I guess dragon eggs can just sort of sit there on the shelf and never go bad. So
right. No best before Nate.
Yeah.
Well, so, in case people missed it, because I don't know if people may or not have, the thing that Jonathan was talking about earlier was that apparently the king was reciting a poem about the conqueror, not what's the name of the king currently?
Aegon.
Aegon the Conqueror, yeah, which is not the Aegon the Son.
Yeah.
And his wife, girlfriend, whatever, misheard it.
Yeah, because in the episode from last season, Rhaenyra asks Viserys a question while he's kind of delirious in bed, and he doesn't answer it properly until Alicent comes back in the room and says, you know, yes, Aegon, you know, Aegon's prediction is true. We have to do what we can. And that's what this whole slow burn for these first three episodes has been about, is that Rhaenyra knows the truth, or the truth of the prophecy, that is, that her father believed in, which is there has to be a Targaryen on the throne that has this knowledge, because by the time that the long winter comes and the problem comes out of the north, there has to be a Targaryen to stop whatever's happening. And it works out in the end, because we know that both Jon Snow and Daenerys are there to help stop it. And they are both Targaryens. But what she's trying to do is basically make sure that, you know, all possibilities for not disrupting the Targaryen family line are taken before it turns into battle. And Alicent basically says, tough TP, we're going to have a fight one way or the other. It's funny, because this theme of the season has been, you know, are you team black or are you team green? And there's reasons to both like and dislike both teams. Obviously, you know, children murder on both sides, not good. But Alicent now knowing the truth and still being unwilling to do anything about it really tips the scales towards team black being the good guys and team green being the bad guys. Because she, in theory, could say, I was wrong, we should fix this. You know, but she says, no, it's gone too far, we're not going back. And as a result, we're going to get a bloodbath that it doesn't completely take the Targaryens out of ruling, but it's what leads to their eventual downfall. What do you guys think about the talky episodes? You know, we've gotten probably more talky than actiony so far this season. I mean, part of what I loved about Game of Thrones was the sort of the Tyrion, you know, just amazing. They had so many excellent actors just having these conversations and the political manipulations as well as the battles. I don't mind these ones, but I have seen a little bit of blowback online. People were like, you know, it's called House of the Dragon. Why aren't we seeing more dragons? You know,
we didn't see dragons in Game of Thrones until whatever. Oh, by the way, you forgot to mention one of my favorite things from the show, speaking of what they said, was when Daemon says, it's a big chair made of swords.
Yeah. That whole scene when he arrives at Harrenhal was a bit of a hoot. Too, where he comes in and he's like, I claiming Harrenhal, and they just say, evidently.
Yeah, my first quote goes back to,
did you bring any money? Yeah.
That guard at Harrenhal that literally just halts and then just getting completely owned immediately.
Yeah. I don't think Daemon was interested in halting. Yeah, that there was a couple of good scenes. The one there where he meets Sir Simon, who clearly does not like his nephew at all. And, you know, so Simon Strong basically says, you can have the castle. We don't like our liege lord. We don't like, you know, Larys, who, you know, Larys, limping Larys from the Red Keep. And the other scene is the one with Ulf, the man who claims to be the bastard son of Balon the Brave. So he claims to be Daemon and Viserys's illegitimate brother. And, you know, he's like telling all this story about, you know, oh, and, you know, my aunt should be on the throne and everything else. And then the king shows up. He's like, oh, I'll hail the king.
Oh, really? Yeah.
That was pretty funny. And then, yeah, we didn't talk about the really over the top and gratuitous at times brothel scene with Aegon.
Oh, right.
And Aemond.
Yes. Yeah.
Where that was there was a lot of stuff going on in there.
Yeah.
I guess HBO wanted to earn its reputation for this isn't TV, this is HBO. But there was a lot of stuff going on in that scene. I the meme that made me laugh the hardest this week is the scene where the young man who plays Aemond is caught obviously in bed with this woman, and he's, you know, his brother the king is laughing at him, and so he gets up and he's stark naked and he's a very slim person and he slithers off. And people were comparing it to the scene in The Simpsons where Monty Burns comes out of the shower and, you know, don't just stand there, Simpson, hand me a towel. Mm-hmm. You know, tall, skinny, you know. So that one made me laugh pretty good. But that was, I guess it's supposed to, once again, talk about, we see two parts of this that are sort of connected. We see Aemon kind of goading Aegon in the small council, sort of saying, you know, oh, maybe you should stay here. You don't want to get burned. And then we also see, you know, him basically mocking him for going back and seeing the same prostitute that he lost his virginity to and taunting him. So these brothers have a really complicated, pretty unpleasant relationship where Aegon is clearly a jerk and a bully and a rapist, we've established. I did see also on social that someone flagged that the woman, the barmaid who gets smacked on the rear end in the scene with Ulf is the same girl that got raped by Aegon in the first season and got a bag full of money and some abortion tea from Alicent. I didn't clock her at the time, so I'm glad there are people with you know, this is why the internet works sometimes, is the crowdsourcing information. But yeah, it was the same actress, same woman. So yeah, when she gets smacked on the bottom there, you see her face. I guess it's the same person. So she lost her job and, you know, got raped, lost her job, got a bag full of money, and had to go work as a barmaid. So wherein the person who just raped her just walked into the bar and offered to buy a round for everybody. So great.
Cool. Move on to the boys. Depp boys.
Depp boys.
Sure. Yeah.
Speaking of Tyler Durden.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting twist.
Yeah.
This episode was as messed up as the last episode was with the mutated animals, farm animals, which was pretty over the top and pretty spectacular and gory. The Tech Knight sex dungeon was... chef's kiss. So messed up. What if Batman's Batcave was in fact an S&M dungeon is the funniest idea I've heard in a while. It was so just, again, they pushed the envelope so hard. Yes, you can say that some of it was a little gratuitous, but Huey trying to keep his cool while people are doing things to him and he's wearing this mask and the whole thing was cringy but hilarious.
Right. I did capture one of the things in terms of what did they say. He at one point, the person, webmaster, web spinner, what's his name, webmaster, web,
yeah,
web weaver, I think is what it was.
Web weaver. There
when
you
he,
go
he says, that's my web hole.
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
when he's getting his injection.
Yeah, this was an interesting one, and you know, it seems like we got some. Well, I don't know. We'll see. Theoretically, Tech Knight could be off the board by the end of this one. But I think you're right to flag, Tim. I think the real kind of holy moment of this is at the end. Two scenes at the end that are pretty like jaw dropping. One is when we find out that the Jeffrey Dean Morgan character has actually just been inside of Butcher's head along with his ex-wife, who's also dead, and that he's clearly been going through that same kind of multiple personality, Tyler Durdenism kind of moment, and that he's been the one who's, you know, trying to get the super lethal dose of the, you know, Gen V virus that will not just kill the Homelander, but it is so virulent it would kill everybody. And
including his son, yeah.
Including his son and including two of the members of the boys, essentially. It would kill Kimiko and it would kill Annie, too. So that's pretty big news. But also the scene at the end with Firecracker and Homelander.
That was something.
I didn't know that it was public knowledge that he was had a breast milk fetish.
We didn't know that?
We knew that as the sort of omniscient viewers.
You mean beyond what because he's been hiding it, right?
But why that would be something that she knew, unless, you know.
Doesn't somebody walk in on him when he's in the hallway at some point? Two, three episodes ago?
It must have been tipped off there. I'll have to go back and watch again and sort of see if there was something that foreshadowed it. But it did make me laugh that was her sort of, you know, her big play was, what if you could drink my breast milk? That was pretty funny twist and pretty interesting way to come at that one. Jaime, what'd you take away from this one?
I was kind of wondering what was going to end up happening with Butcher. I wasn't the first one to sort of think that Negan, I know you gave his actual name, I'm going to call him Negan for simplicity. Negan was like not real because he didn't like really actually interact with anyone else. I kind of wasn't surprised when he started yelling at the wife, the dead ex-wife. But it did make me wonder, because they have been showing like something a little bit weird with Butcher's illness. So Homelander says, oh, like you've got this big like cancer around your brain kind of thing. But there's like stuff moving in his temples and his back. Like it feels like not a cancer per se. It feels like some other thing, like a worm or something is in him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So speaking of things that are coming up quickly towards their conclusion, only two more episodes to go in this season. It'll be interesting to see. You know, obviously, we know we're getting one final season after this one, so we certainly don't have to have everything resolved. But it'll be interesting to see where they decide to leave things off at the end of this one. Because, you know, I don't want this just to be one gigantic arc. I'd like it if we got, you know, some sense of satisfying end to this particular season. Although I suspect that they will probably leave us on some kind of good, you know, dun dun dun, because they want us to be dying for that last season, right?
But in this show, it's not the destination; it's the journey that we enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. I mean, it's so. I mean, the whole thing at the reception at Tech Knight's house with the far right people. You know, the what's her name? Victoria, right? Victoria, the vice president elect. Victoria says, I just got mansplained abortion. like, it's such a smart show. It's so interesting that a show can be that pushing the envelope so hard on, you know, the taboo topics. Obviously, this one, you know, the sort of S&M dungeon and the whole thing, but also can be just so scathing in its look at, you know, politics and society and culture and social media and all these other things. It's such an interesting balancing act they do. There are times where you're like, God, this show is so stupid. And there are times where you're like, this is so brilliant. But I think that having both of those things balanced is really what makes this a work of art. I mean, kudos, beyond kudos. I still think this is the smartest show that's being made right now.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty good.
Yeah, I also think, you know, so Mother's Milk doesn't know that Sage necessarily is still alive. Because, you know, normally you shoot somebody in the head, they stay gone. But I think kudos to the folks for finding a way to do something weird and gross that also teaches us, the viewers, of like, hey, her getting shot in the head, not a big deal. Actually, would have been better to shoot her in the body. As far as we know, that doesn't heal.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the head does, but not the body?
Well, the brain does. Well, she'll probably still have that hole unless she, like, spackles it in or something. I don't think she has, like, a Wolverine.
Well, no, she had that scene where she got poked in the eye because she said she loses her, she becomes, like, lobotomized.
Right. Yeah, she basically asked the Deep at one point to lobotomize her just so that she can be just that much more impaired so she can enjoy his company, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But she said, no matter what she does, her brain grows back. She doesn't say anything about her body. It's just her brain grows back.
I see. And that's why she's the smartest person in the world kind of thing.
I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, the part, the two scenes with Cake in this episode that are pretty funny. The one with her where, you know, she's supposed to be laying out her master plan as this incredible genius. And Homelander turns around and she's just shoveling cake into her mouth.
Yeah.
And, you know, and staring at him wide eyed.
Giggling and drooling. Yeah.
It was very, very funny. But, you know, this scene with Huey and the cake was really something else.
Yeah. Same cake, right?
Or it's different German chocolate. It's your favorite.
Yes.
Oh, so stupid and so funny and so smart. Yeah, I still love this show. I love it so much. I actually just a few weeks ago started rereading the book just to sort of refresh. The book is not, it's not a word for word. It's more conceptual.
Right.
But yeah, it's equally brilliant in its way.
So should we be worried about children reading comic books, Jonathan? Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't give this one to a child under any circumstance at all. I would not recommend this one for younger readers at all. I was laughing. A good friend of mine is a listener to the podcast, and we text back and forth. He's a big fan of The Boys. And he said, he sent me a note yesterday and said, have you seen the episode yet? And I haven't had time yet. He said, make sure you're surrounded by old people and children before you turn it on. I said, okay, I'll get on that.
Yeah, it was funny because I was watching this one on my Vision Pro, and it's one of the few times, because, you know, when my partner enters the room, if there's anything dangerous happening on TV, I have to pause it because he's very sensitive to that kind of thing. And it's the first time I thought, hey, I don't have to pause this.
That's true. It's true. It's right there.
Yeah. Anywho. All right, Lois, speaking of which, let's move on to our watch list. And I think, Jaime, you're up first. Apparently, yeah. There's some show that we're not able to watch here in Canada.
I felt way better about this pick, you know, like 24 hours ago. So I apologize to the folks in Canada and elsewhere who cannot see Star Trek Prodigy Season 2. I wrote on Netflix because I just assumed it would be on Netflix everywhere. So my bad on that. This season is, I think, pretty good. I mean, I think if folks didn't like Prodigy Season 1, you're probably not going to like Season 2, at least from what I've seen so far.
Is it still Starter Trek?
It has some of that, but now they're like, you know, they're not in the Academy, but they're trying to, you know, do prep school to get in the Academy sort of thing, go on an adventure with Captain Admiral Janeway. So they know a little bit more, but they, you know, they still don't know everything, and clearly they would need to go through schooling for that sort of stuff. And it's kind of leaning a little bit towards... And when I say leaning, I mean lean. I didn't say, like, went off on a rampage. I didn't say took a right-hand turn at 60 miles an hour. No, it started to lean a little bit more towards Lower Decks-esque Easter egg territory. Not normally a show to have to keep that close of a track, but I'm like, oh, they're dropping quite a few in the first few episodes, at least.
Cool. All right. Jonathan, what do you got?
Okay. I would like to advise our listeners to strap in their safety belts. Make sure your arms are inside the cabin at all times. Mm-hmm. Because I watched maybe one of the worst superhero movies ever conceived or executed this week. Dropped on streaming here in Canada.
Even worse than The Greatest American Hero?
I like The Greatest American Hero. Don't do that. That's right. Awful.
Okay.
Okay. I watched Madam Web. And my God, I thought to myself, you know what? It's here. It's part of a free streaming. It's part of a streaming service. I already get. I'll check it out. The worst thing that can come from this is I'll get content for the podcast. Well, that's exactly what I got. And that's the only thing I got other than like a very large bruise on my forehead from banging it against the wall as I was watching it. It's so bad. Okay, I like some of the ingredients. I thought, okay, you know, like Dakota Johnson. I don't mind Dakota Johnson. I thought, okay, Sydney Sweeney, like her. Isabelle Merced, Celeste O'Connor. I'm like, okay, sure. You know, some supporting roles. Adam Scott's in it. Mike Epps, Emma Roberts. I'm like, okay, I like the performers. I thought, okay, let's go in with an open mind. It is the closest I've ever seen anything come to something that was written by AI. If you told AI to write a completely robotic version of a superhero story, this is what you would get. And worst of all is that it's not even really a superhero movie. It's such false advertising. Mm-hmm. It's called Madam Web, and you're supposed to think, okay, they show you in the trailer that Madam Web... basically, what her ability is the ability to see the future. So she, for ridiculously and really, really, really nonsensical reasons that get explained in the movie, she has the ability to see into the future briefly, and then she can go back into her own time and she can make course corrections to try and help things. Okay, good in principle. We also see in the trailer, we get glimpses of the supporting actors, so Sydney Sweeney, Isabelle Merced, and Celeste O'Connor, as these three young women who are also super powered, and they're all characters from the Spider-Man comics. And I thought, okay, so, you know, it's kind of a, you know, all-female spider-themed team-up movie. No, it's not. You know what those are? Those are like 30 seconds of an hour-and-a-half movie that we see those people being in those costumes, because that's glimpsing into the future. There's no point in this movie where there's actually a superhero versus superhero kind of superhero versus supervillain violent conflict or anything. It's just, it's like her basically playing a video game. She sees the future, she changes it, and then something else happens. And then she changes the future, sees the future, changes the future, and then something else happens. It's so awful. It's just so bad. And meanwhile, these performers who I really like are doing nothing to ingratiate you. Admittedly, the dialogue is terrible, and the plot is terrible, and the execution is terrible, so I don't want to get too down on them, but they're not doing themselves any favors. The line deliveries are robotic and boring. I don't find myself invested in any of the characters. As a matter of fact, at a certain point, I was like, I hope the whole place goes up in flames and they all die. It's so bad. I just could not get over how bad it was. So it's currently holds, for the record, it currently holds an 11 on Rotten Tomatoes. That might be generous, but it gives you a good idea of what people think about this. I know I've gotten up on the soapbox before about the waste of everyone's time and money and effort that there has been to keep the franchise, the Spider-Man writ large franchise with Sony, because they own the rights.
Is this a DC rights side of things, or?
No, it's Marvel, but it's Sony Marvel. So they basically, it's part of the deal that was done back in the 90s. Marvel was in trouble as a publishing company. They sold the rights to Spider-Man and all associated Spider-Man characters for film to Sony.
Oh, that's where the Madame Web comes from.
That's where Madame Web comes from. So basically all the characters in this movie are Spider-Man adjacent. And so this falls into the same category as Morbius and Kraven the Hunter and Venom and all this stuff. So these are the sort of off to the side Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's funny because at the beginning of the movie, this thing flips up and you see the Marvel logo, which of course we've all come to know. This is usually a sign of a quality production, but it says in big letters, in association with, and then it shows you the Marvel logo. I'm like, I bet they put that on there to be like, wasn't us. It is a steaming pile. It is just an awful, awful movie. Even I've seen Dakota Johnson has sort of washed her hands of it and said, like, clearly this wasn't something I should have been involved with. I don't like it, and I'm never going to do any of this again. There was talk that this was going to be sort of part of that larger, you know, that they were building to a larger sort of interlocking Spider-Verse kind of thing where, you know, we see Morbius and Venom and Spider-Man and Madame Web and some sort of grand team uppy kind of thing, but I don't think that's in the cards now, considering it did actually make its theoretical money back. It made about $100 million on a budget of about $100 million US, but then you add in marketing and all the other stuff, and there's no way that it made its money back. So it was a money loser. This is all just because if they don't keep making movies, they will lose the rights to Spider-Man, so they're just going to keep churning.
So they phoned this one in, basically. Movies. Yeah.
Again, if you want an unintentional comedy / hate watch, go for it. Go for it. But man, there is almost nothing redeeming about this other than some brief moments of Adam Scott being Adam Scott, who I like.
Right. So it's another endorsement for Atlas, right?
Yeah. I mean, even then, I don't know how desperate you'd need to be to turn this on. I can't even imagine.
I think we get the message.
I watched it and I said, you know, my son asked me, he said, you know, is it as bad as everyone? I said, it is worse. It's so bad. And he said, you should also watch Morbius this week. And you should. I said, I can't do that to myself. I can't watch more than one of these in a week. I'll be despondent. I can't. It's too bad. Bottom line, this is not worth your time. It should have never been made. And I really, really, really encourage you, our dear listeners, to never, ever, ever spend money on these Sony projects other than the animated Miles Morales, because they are just going to keep making more of them if people keep going.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we can't stop people from going to movies. All right, cool. Well, my pick is, I got a couple of picks here. There, it's sort of a crossover, more than just code. Spotcast pick, because it involves the Apple Vision Pro, which, as you know, I got back in February, And it arrives, the Vision Pro arrives in Canada and Germany and France and the UK on next week, on the Friday of next week, right? But on Canada Day, July 1st, they opened up the App Store access to Canadian users, right? And UK users and British users and French users. So I gladly signed out of my American account and signed into my Canadian account, because now I can tell you what Apple TV is like on this thing. So as you know, I've bought a bunch of movies over the years. So I have a bunch of movies that are now, because Apple's doing like they were doing with 4K, if you own the property and it's available in 3D, you can watch it in 3D, right? And I, for example, my pick this week is any and every 3D movie I own watching on my Vision Pro. For example, I started watching I've watched Force Awakens and a few other shows. I watched Dune. I got a copy of Dune a few months ago before the Dune 2 came out. It was available in the States for $4.99. It was available in Canada for $4.99. So I bought it on both accounts and I watched it. And I got to tell you, but sand blowing in the desert in 3D is amazing. Actually, that's not true. You can't really notice it. But the big, you know, the vistas with the harvesters, you know, gathering the spice and stuff like that. Those are amazing. The buildings are amazing. Those kind of things, right? But I started watching, I'm a big Denis Villeneuve fan, right? So I went back and I put on Blade Runner 2049, which I've owned since it came out. And I'm a huge Blade Runner fan. Like, I have multiple copies of the original Blade Runner. I have a Laserdisc bootleg of it. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, I've got the whole all four different versions, the European version, the North American versions, the final cut. The final cut I saw in the theater when it came out. And that, if you get a chance to see Blade Runner with Harrison Ford in a theater using the final cut, definitely go. The sound is amazing. But this is the Blade Runner 2049. I mean, I am now a huge fan of this movie because in 3D, it looks amazing, right? Like, you know, I've talked about before, like the advantage I like about the Vision Pro is that I'm always fighting against those 3D glasses you wear in the cinemas, because I have to make sure my own glasses are clean and then they never kind of sort of keep falling off my nose. So halfway through the movie, probably about 10 times during the movie, I'm adjusting the glasses, which takes away from the experience. Whereas, you know, with the Vision Pro, you're looking at a glorious, you know, letterbox, you know, 6-8 foot wide appearing beauty. I mean, like, and, you know, it's a Villeneuve movie, so it's great. Like Force Awakens, for instance, I noticed that some of the I was watching a bit of, before we started recording today, the scene where Finn and Rey are flying in the Millennium Falcon and he's in the gunner seat. There's parts of it that are out of focus but they're in front of the camera. Like, so it doesn't, I think that may be a movie where I can't remember if they filmed that in 3D or they turned it into 3D, but it does not quite as effective. Whereas the cinematography in Blade Runner is amazing. So that's you know, a huge endorsement. And the fact of the matter is having access to my Apple One account, so I've got Apple One and Music and all the other things, and now I can try out Apple Arcade as well. Mm-hmm. Huge endorsement for that. I can't tell you how much I love that. And you know, the investment in the Vision Pro has basically gone up 10 times compared to where I was before with it. And then speaking of some of the arcade games, I tried a few of them out. I tried to get Crossy Road. There's a Crossy Road app in there, which I couldn't figure out. But somebody told me today you have to use your thumb, your left thumb, and you pinch. So your left thumb becomes like a joystick and your right hand becomes like the jump button. So I got to try that now that I've had that explained to me this afternoon. But I got to tell you, I tried the Lego Builder's Journey app. And what it basically is it was written in Unity, which is a language that you use as opposed to Swift for writing apps. So it's kind of a with Unity, you can write 3D stuff in Unity. Unity is a gaming engine, and bring it over to Vision Pro directly from Unity. So you can't really go into, you can't go into Xcode and manipulate it. So it, the whole app is built in Unity and brought over and played on here. So that may be why Apple didn't feature it in their Apple Design Awards last, you know, a couple months or the beginning of June. But the Lego game is so amazing. It's like you're looking at actual pieces in front of you and you can bring them in closer. and you kind of, you know, look at them and you pinch to pick them up, and you move them, and you tap your other hand to rotate them, kind of like Tetris, I guess, in a sense, but like on rotating them on horizontal, right? And you place these pieces in place, and you can do like a free, you can play with Lego, you can basically build your own thing, or you can go through some of these little sort of storylines that they've got for you. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's very realistic. In fact, you can even reach out and pinch to pick up a piece if you're having trouble navigating with your eyes and just pinching. You can actually reach out and pick it up and put it into position, and that's amazing. And I also tried the chess game out. There's a game room, I think it's called, which has checkers and chess and a few other things. And I got my ass kicked twice, but you know, by the computer. But you know, if you're a chess fan, it's an amazing sort of thing. Like you feel like you've got this chessboard rolling in front of you. So highly endorse. Again, the Apple Vision Pro. It's coming to Canada, you know, in a couple of weeks. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, a lot of amazing technology. I'm super glad that now I can have access to all my movies. Now I'm dying to find out what movies are. And there's lists on the Disney Channel, and there's lists on Apple TV in terms of what, like, you can go to like a 3D menu and you can see all the stuff that's available there, right? So the Disney stuff obviously is free with your Disney account or your Disney subscription, but the Apple stuff you have to buy, you know, from iTunes or whatever. I don't know if, I think in the States, HBO Max might have them, but I was reading some of the newsroom stuff. When the Vision Pro launched in the United States, they talked about having 150 3D titles available. In the Canadian press release, it says there's 100 titles available. So obviously there's a licensing thing between the countries. Here we go again, right? Kind of thing. So it'd be kind of cool to see, like, cause I mean, you had a 3D TV, Jonathan, and mm-hmm. You can still buy 3D Blu-rays and HDs or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. But I'm surprised that that Blu-ray.com site you go to find out what's on sale. They don't have a 3D, like, what's available on Vision Pro 3D choice, other than, you know, like I said, the Disney app and I think maybe the Max app and the Apple TV app, obviously. So yeah, I'll be looking for 3D movies to watch. And I'd love to, I think Arrival, the one, the other Villeneuve movie he did before Blade Runner.
Yep.
I think that one's available in 3D as well. So yeah, I'll have to check that one out. Like I said, there's a whole slew of them on. I mean, Quantumania, most of the Marvel stuff is available. The Star Wars things on Disney are available. You know, Rogue One is available. Rogue One's a pretty amazing movie in 3D now as well. So, but the Blade Runner, like, it's just, I was totally amazed by the way it looks on there. And speaking of Disney Plus, and speaking of the things that just came out, The Bear dropped like last year. They released one episode at a time, so you got the whole sort of serialized, you know, anticipation thing. Unfortunately, they dropped The Bear. I think it's 8 or 10 episodes. They dropped them all at once on the Disney Channel. So I sat down and probably took about 2 or 3 days and went through them. Great show, but this year it's kind of a different. I mean, the first couple of seasons were more about the struggle of Carm, who's Carm Baranowski, which is why they call him the Bear. His struggle in terms of coming back into the, you know, Chicago to work in this is the name of the beef sandwich place that his brother started. This is a bit of flashback stuff about him. This is more about his culinary journey. I think the actor from Community, who's the main actor from Community? Anyway, he plays an abusive chef.
Joel McHale.
Coleman played. Yeah, yes, that's what it is. Yeah, and Olivia Coleman plays one of his, you know, former mentors, who's retiring at the end of this season. I mean, in the show, and sort of his journey to becoming and how fastidious and almost anal he is about the plates he puts together, kind of thing. You know, it's that you know, the hoity-toity, you got the big plate, and you got the little tiny piece of meat and the, you know, garnish and a little bit of sauce. And I don't get it myself, but that's apparently the culinary experience, you know, that people go for. That kind of, you know, he wants to get a Michelin star, sort of the journey he's on in starting this restaurant. So it picks up for where it left off on the last end of season 2 and carries on. But I was gonna recommend watching The Bear. I found this season is good. You know, I mean, you're invested in the characters. You want to see where they go, but it's a departure from the previous two seasons. Is what I'm going to say, and it's a to be continued. So the last season is next coming out. I don't know when, but this one doesn't have a conclusion. Spoilers.
Boo.
It's a journey. I told you, it's a journey.
Sounds like it.
That's it for this week, Jonathan. People want to get in touch with you. Where would they find you?
You can find me on X or on Instagram as at JPK News, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime, people can get in touch with you. Let me guess.
I'm on Twitter. It's at Dead with the Hair.
All right. Cool. My name is Tim Mitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Twitter machine is where you'll find me, and on the Mastodon machine and the thread spool thing, whatever it's called. Yeah, so until next time, we'll see you in the future, unless we're on Netflix.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
I appreciate you all helping there. The fun facts to leave you with.
I was going to get the hook out on Jonathan on Madam Web, though.
Oh, my God. It's just, I can't, honestly, stop. That was restrained. It was restrained. It was so awful.
It was a, definitely a downfall video meme where the kind of rant that might be good to line up. But in happier stuff, because I... You know, at the beginning, we were talking about Canada Day and Independence Day in Canada and the U.S. So we know that the sesquicentennial, the 150th anniversary of Canada's Confederation, was 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It's been way too long for the U.S. The bicentennial was 1976. The semiquincentennial is coming up in, I lost the date, what is it, 2026. And then after that, the next big one is the tercentennial in 2076. So
that's 300 years.
Yeah. So 250 would be the one coming up in 2026.
Well, we'll talk about that in a couple of years.
Semiquincentennial. Semiquincentennial.
Stay tuned for our 300th episode of Spotcast, where we talk about that.
This is one of those weird ones that goes like really far back. The only reason it sort of came up is surely, you know, this was probably topical in Canada around 2017. But on the More Than Just Code podcast, it was Greg Heo who brought up the sesquicentennial. So that one has stuck in my head for a long time.
I went in and made some Canadian art for that that episode. Of that show.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, what do we call that one?
I have no idea. Let's take a look.
Yeah. What was that? How do you spell sesquicentennial?
S-E-S-Q-I? Where it's somewhere here in Wikipedia.
Yeah, I got it here. Sesquicentennial. Because I had...
S-E-S-Q-U-I.
MTJC done in special... It was called episode 150 of More Than Just Code. The MTJC sesquicentennial episode. It's got the MTJC 150, and I was at, I think I was in New Brunswick when I did that show art. Huh. I remember sitting at Pat's house doing this one.
Mm-hmm.
Very special. Lots of ads on this page. I added some advertising people. I should find out if they're giving us any money, because they sure are taking up a lot of real estate on our website. pretty bad on the iPad, actually. There we go. Oh, and they came back. I clicked all the little X's to close the windows, and then I scrolled, and they came back.
Out of curiosity, Tim, if is your iVision, what the heck is that called? Vision Pro? Is your Vision Pro like linked to your account? Like, can you log in as someone else?
No, you have to log out of your Apple Care. You have to log out of, like, I'm logged in like you would on a Mac kind of thing, like, or on a phone, actually. It's more like a phone than a Mac, right? Like, okay. On a Mac, you can log in as a different user.
Right.
But on
I have a ton of movies on the Apple library that I'm sure are 3D. I didn't know if you could like log in as me and get access to them.
Yeah, I could. I could log into your store account. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you want to do that, let me know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, I got a boatload of stuff over the years that I'm sure.
But I mean, that's what I mean. I don't know. Like, you have to go into, I'd have to go into the Apple app, because only the Vision Pro, like the you know, I don't know if you've seen the little silhouette of the Vision Pro. It's like a one color icon. Mm-hmm. When you go into the Vision Pro and you look at a movie, like when you open up the Disney app or whatever, you see that little, you see 4K, and then beside that you see the little outline of the Vision Pro, and that's how you know it's in 3D. I think it says 3D on it as well, but because I mean, some movies that were I know are 3D are not available on 3D on the Vision Pro or in Disney, right? So yeah, and Gravity, I have Gravity too, but it's less than ideal. Let's put it that way. I mean, I don't think it was high enough resolution or whatever. But I mean, I've seen Alien in 3D. It's on a special IMAX cut of Alien. Of course, there's a Phantom Menace that was done in 3D, right? After the fact. And there's a bunch of movies that, think of all the movies we've seen over the years. It's like this, the No Way Home apparently is in 3D, the Spider-Man movie.
Yep.
Yeah. So it'd be kind of interesting to see some of those titles, right? I think the oldest movie, I was trying to figure this out, the oldest movie that I have on here, I think it's Hugo that's a Scorsese film that he did in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the oldest one that's available in the store.
Yeah, I have the oldest thing I might have might be the Clone Wars movie. I think might be the first thing I added to my library years ago.
The Clone Wars? Like, you mean Star Wars Clone Wars?
Yeah. Yeah, they did the... Remember when the series was going to debut, they actually decided to put...
Oh, the actual movie, the cartoon one?
No, it's the same as the... Well, I mean, it's still a cartoon, but yeah.
Oh, you mean Star Wars 2, The Clone Wars?
It's... No, it's Star Wars, The Clone Wars. So it's the same as the digitally animated series.
Okay, yeah.
But they did like a, 90-minute... theatrical movie release of it.
Oh, okay. And
so when I bought the Blu-ray of it at one point, it had a digital copy. So that was, I think, the first thing I redeemed in maybe 2008 or 9.
Yeah.
That's, if I go back in chronological order on my library, that's the first thing in there.
Well, I mean, the Disney Channel has a 3D menu on when you go to the Disney app on the Vision Pro. Mm-hmm. And it has a 3D menu, so you can see all the, but there's only like, I think there's only like 16 movies or so that are available in Disney in 3D, right? So, but I don't know how many are, I mean, of the movies that I own, I mean, I own all the new J.J. Abrams Star Treks. I think the second two are in 3D, not the first one, right? Mm-hmm. Because those are available to watch on 3D. Yeah, so I mean, you have to sort of like, yeah, I'd have to put the device on and go in and see what's what, but it sure does make a difference. That's why it was my pick, right?
Yeah,
I haven't tried Apple Music on it yet, but the arcade, the fact that I don't play arcade. I mean, I've had the Apple One account for years. I've never really found any. I never really thought there would be any game that I would want to play, but yeah, having played with the Vision Pro. The Lego app and the chess app and stuff like that. I mean, I'm not going to go out of my way to play chess again, but there's a backgammon game I'd like to give it a shot too, right? Because when you have arcade, all the games are free, right? Because you're paying a monthly fee, right?
Yeah.
It's too bad you can't look up what's available in 3D outside of the environment, right? So maybe somebody should start a blog.
Maybe. All right. Well, should we let Jaime go?
We should.
Okay. Yes.
Bye.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye.
All right. Talk next week. Take care, guys. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.